Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar.
Hello, welcome to the RTE GA podcast. Mikey Stafford here. Hope you're all well. Big weekend of football ahead, big weekend of football behind us. So I'm glad to say I'm joined by Cora Staunton, Oisín McConville, and as always, Rory O'Neill. How are we all doing, folks?
Good, Mikey.
Mikey, how's it going?
Good, thanks. Good. Very good. You've got a mirrored wardrobe behind you, Rory, which is great. We can get, you know, we get to see your form every now and again.
We get to rear end as well.
I like it. We should keep this every week.
At least you know I'm wearing clothes the whole way up anyway. That's
I believe we insist on that every episode, Rory, after what happened before. Just to mention, later on, we will have our hurling part to the show where we'll have Derek McGrath and former referee Barry Kelly joining us. And we got nothing to talk about from a hurling point of view, obviously, not with a former referee. But big ball cold first. I know it's been talked up and down, left to right and sideways, but there's no getting away from the fact that Stephen Cluxton's will he, won't he, retirement from the Dublin Intercounty panel is a big story. And Cora, I think it would always be a huge story that Stephen Cluxton retired, but in some ways it's been made even bigger by the very Stephen Cluxton-esque way he seems to have departed, which is by saying nothing to anybody and kind of, there's just a lot of doubt there, which even for a team of Dublin's prowess, it's not good to have that kind of uncertainty, is it?
Yeah, I know it's I don't know if there's uncertainty within the Dublin panel. I think they probably know well what the situation is. I think it's the uncertainty among the public and maybe the Dublin fans and probably the rest of the fans around the other counties that are trying to win in All-Ireland. And obviously Dublin without Stephen Cluxton are, you know, probably a different animal. So yeah, I just think it's very Stephen Cluxton-like, just talking to Oisín off air there. Yeah, it's probably drawn a lot more attention than he wanted, by the sounds of it. He's obviously retired. I'm sure he's told Des in and he's told everyone else within the Dublin setup. But being him, he just obviously didn't want any big media attention from it. And it's probably created the opposite. So, yeah, you know, I'd be very surprised to see Stephen Cluxton back in a Dublin jersey this year. You know, he's not the type of guy that, you know, half commits and comes in, you know, in the middle of a Leinster championship. He seems to be the type of guy that's all in or nothing. So, yeah, it's probably creating a story and it's giving Desi a headache. And, you know, probably Desi didn't deal with it the best last weekend. But then, you know, it's difficult for Desi when Stephen isn't coming out and saying it himself. But that's Stephen Cluxton. I suppose he's the right to retire whatever way he'd like.
Yeah. I was just thinking about it this morning, Oisín, and there are some, not entirely, but there are some parallels with how Jim Gavin kind of departed Dublin. Obviously, he did announce it, but he didn't leave straight away. He didn't leave when people would think he would leave. In fact, he kind of left only, you know, a month or two for his successor, who turned out to be Desi Farrell, to come in. It is unusual for such an iconic player to slink away like this in the modern age, but I guess it was kind of maybe your time or before your time. It wasn't that unusual, really, for an intercounty player to just not make themselves available to the panel or to not be picked by the manager. And there weren't GPA statements. There weren't, you know, Sunday newspaper spreads. It was just, you know, it was just kind of the natural cycle of things.
Well, I played in an era when players retired. We bounced together and they got a clock or some other piece of useless
watch.
Yeah, something useless that they would never ever look at again. But I suppose the thought was there. And then when I retired, it was more you just retired and that was it. Somebody, the county board would make an announcement that you were gone, and that was it. You didn't do anything around, you know, thanking people or anything like that. And I suppose now we're in the era where, you know, I can't remember who exactly it was. It was a young lad from Kildare who made a rather large statement, and I think he'd only played for Kildare for 12 months. But I suppose the way I would look at it would be, you know, what Cora is saying and telling us If that's true, I think that's fair. I think that's okay. He's entitled to move on whatever way he can. But if there is no communication there with Desi Farr, like Desi suggested last week, I first of all think it's mismanagement from Desi's point of view, and I think it's shabby from Stephen Cluxton's point of view. I'm under no illusions the effect that Stephen Cluxton has had on our game, how good a role model he's been, and purely and simply from a football point of view, just how good he's been, how consistent he's been, you know, from probably he had a little bit of growing up to do. I remember we played them in 2003. Yeah, it was sent off against us in 2003, and there was a lot of petulance involved in that. I think he was a different type of character then, but I think the way he's matured and the way he's made the game his own, and made that position his own. And when I say the position, I mean position as in goalkeeper, not the Dublin number one goalkeeper, but goalkeeping in general. But I think if he's left in the way that he's left, and he's left people hanging up in the air, well, then I think that's shabby, and I think that takes away from what he's done, because that would have a serious effect on what is happening in that change room. I don't care how they manage each other, how they are responsible for each other's actions, you know, how good of a player-led situation it is. That's going to cause upheaval. So if that is the case, then I think, as I say, it's shabby from him. But if everybody is in under no illusions that he has walked away, don't see why Desi wouldn't come out and just tell everybody last week that look, he's retired. He doesn't want any fuss, and that's okay. I don't think, you know, I think there would be people would write about him. People would be entitled to talk about his legacy and all those sort of things. But I think that there would be an opportunity for it to then drift away or disappear or whatever it is, and he will be left to his own devices. But I think the way it is at the minute, I think it's definitely not helpful for a squad, and it's maybe slightly mismanaged from Desi's point of view.
Yeah, Rory, you had Kieran Kilkenny making the back pages and the headline on all the websites a couple of weeks ago, and a press event. He was asked about Stephen Cox. He said Stephen's on the list of players to return to training. So Kilkenny was either, misled, was unsure of the status of Stephen Cluxton, or wanted to say something vague enough that didn't commit him to kind of confirming Cluxton's return. I don't think Kieran Kilkenny seems like a similar kind of man to Cluxton, that I don't think he gives too much of a damn about the media or what they say or think about him. But it's kind of an unfair situation to put a teammate into as well, isn't it?
It is and it isn't. I mean, it depends on what he would probably have been told by maybe their media people before he went in to do that media gig, in terms of, look, if Cluxton comes up, the reality is he's not fully stepped away. He stepped away in the short term, but we're still working on the basis that he will come back at some point. And I'd say, to be fair to someone like Kieran Kilkenny, he's probably faced questions like that before, maybe during the league in earlier seasons when Cluxton wouldn't necessarily have been around. I think the big difference this time around is Leinster semi-final is Sunday week, and there's still no sign of him now. And I think at this stage, I suppose, it's just a different nature to the championship, the way it's kind of a shotgun competition, and it's so quick. I think Cora's spot on. I think that's it. You're not going to see him this year. Is he gone for good? Is he going to come back at 40? Who knows what are his priorities are? I think to go back and just to address one particular point, and I'd certainly be interested in everybody's view on this. I saw that they shipped some criticism in the aftermath on after Sunday night, which was Tomás O'Shea and Colm O'Rourke's reaction and handling of it. I didn't think there was anything, unreasonable or unfair in what they said, that if he is packed it up or if he is finished, just come out and say it. I mean, it's to my mind now, it's just creating a bit of a circus that probably Dublin don't really want. Desi can certainly do without, because let's be honest, I watched that game with Wexford. Like Wexford gave them socks of it now, and they're not firing as well as they have. That now, if Cluxton is gone, that's another layer of invincibility from the cloak whipped away. All of a sudden, the chasing pack of one has caught up that little bit more again when you go out to play them. He's not there. And I think, in fairness to Desi, he's enough to be handling and enough to be dealing with and dealing with all of those issues without having to worry about someone who's not going to be playing at this point. And I think for everybody's sake, I think just get clarity out on it. Deal with it like Dublin always deal with these things, which is clean, clinical, and devoid of any grey area or hearsay or bullshit. And that's what's really surprising about this particular way that they've managed to handle this. It's really surprising. It's very un-Dublin-like and it's very un-Cluxton-like.
It has lingered. We've been talking about it for 3 weeks on the podcast, but, you know, so it does. It's turning into the long goodbye, which is probably the exact opposite of what was wanted. Okay, let's look at
that. Can we just touch on the air of invincibility thing? Because it sort of definitely reminds me of the United thing, where when, you know, Ferguson kept that going for as long as he could, probably with a squad that they weren't as good as the previous squad put like that, but he was able to maintain that air of invincibility. And while he maintained that air of invincibility, United were able to be successful. When he stepped away, and as soon as teams seen the chink of light, as I can't remember the first team to go to Old Trafford and win, but once they went and won there, that air of invincibility was gone. Some of the players started to disappear. You know, you would know that behind the scenes, things weren't just as good as what they were.
Yep.
And this just gives teams an opportunity to look and go, listen, everything's not fucking perfect there. So everything's not maybe the way it seems. Maybe it's not the way it's been built up. Desi's coming out and like, instead of being forthright and saying, listen, this man's not around, he won't be around, you know, because like, what's going to happen after the next game? I think he's not going to field a question around Stephen Cluxton. Of course he is. That furore continues. So the air of invincibility thing for me is the interesting one.
Oisín, if even take it closer to home and look at the Kilkenny example. In 2015, Kilkenny won an All-Ireland. Right? They beat Galway in the final. Fair enough. After a replay, in a game they should not have won that All Ireland, but they did it in classic Kilkenny fashion, and it was Henry Shefflin's last year. And Henry went, and again, once Henry went, you know, all the others saw weakness. Kilkenny haven't won an All Ireland since. You know what I mean? So this has an effect.
Yeah.
You know, your big personality players, when they exit stage left, no different for Cora. When Cora, like, I mean, I know you won a couple of All Irelands early on, but if Cora were to step away from a Mayo, all the others are going to see weakness and they're going to try and pounce on it, you know?
Yeah, it's true, Cora. And I suppose there was the Cork dominance, obviously, that you all had to deal with. And we do, when a team is at their height, as Dublin were, let's say, last December, or you could look at the August before, if you want to look at a more normal championship, it gets to the point where you can't see how a team can be beaten. It's like, this team can't be beaten. You know, they've nearly turned over the whole 15 now at this stage. It's not a once in a generation thing. It becomes like this almost fait accompli that a team becomes unbeatable if you say they're unbeatable often enough, when I suppose history has taught us that, you know, no team is unbeatable. Even in Scotland, Celtic or Rangers, they're 9 in a row, you know, kind of those dynasties ends eventually. It happens in every sport, but it's funny how the mind makes you think at the time, this is it forever. This is our fate.
Yeah, and it's like everything can go on forever, but you know, I take it from the point of view are Dublin and Desi being a little bit cute, probably taking a little bit of pressure off the team in the regards that it's all about Cluxton now. It's not about the performances, or they're trying to get maybe to a Leinster final, and people still haven't talked about Dublin, and maybe, you know, we're not talking about Dublin and, you know, their mediocre performance against Wexford as much as we're talking about Cluxton and whether he's staying or going. As I said, I'd be very surprised if Stephen hasn't let the management team and players know that he's not coming back. But I think that, yeah, obviously he doesn't want the attention around it, but are they using it from the point of view of making everyone still doubt that Cluxton might still be coming back and using it? I just think they're around the block too long. It's a little bit of a distraction, but I think that Dublin team are so professional now. you know, been small little distractions. I think they well know if Gluckson's not going to come back this year, they know what their team is moving forward. They know Comerford is going to be their goalkeeper. So I think it's everyone else that's getting worked up and getting distracted by it. But I actually don't think that the Dublin panel, they're there too long. And, you know, Oisin talks about teams are there and the likes of the Manchester United or the Kilkenny Herders. If you're around in that era where you're winning all the time and being successful, everything else is just, they're just, it's closed off from you. They're not distractions. You don't get distracted by them. You know, it's not, it's no thing that they're putting Kieran Kilkelly out front the media. They're not putting a very young 19 or 20 year old guy's first year in his parent. Kieran Kilkelly is around a long time and knows what to say. And they're, you know, nowadays it's not like when we were playing, we went out and you could say anything to the media. They're being fed nearly what to be said at this stage. So I think Dublin, to be honest, are handling it and know exactly what they want. And I do think some stages this year, Desi will probably have to come out and say that Cluxton has retired. But I just think they're waiting for their time and taking a little bit of pressure off them, you know, because what are they going for now? 7 in a row. They know exactly what's happening within the panel. I think they've known for the last while, and why they're not openly coming out and saying it. I think they're actually playing it quite cute.
That's probably
fair enough. If that is the case, it's not the first time they've used it. They used the Connolly situation in a similar vein, on different occasions, and we were getting very head up about what was going on, and behind the scenes they were burrowing away and winning all Ireland, there's a distinct possibility that could be the case.
All right, Stephen Cluxton's final assist for the Dublin footballers, it has a nice ring to it. Let's look ahead to this weekend's matches then, folks. Let's do it chronologically so we can get the Cork chat out of the way quickly. Cork v Limerick, Rory, we might as well start with you. It's probably the best draw Cork could have got in that. Limerick aren't a bad team, but there's not the scars of last year from Tipperary, and there's not obviously the fact it's not Kerry, which is obviously always a good thing for Cork, you could argue.
I think it's a... I'm not playing the poor mouth here or the Yeras. I think it's a risky enough match for Cork. I think it could possibly be one of the more, well, it'll certainly be the more competitive of the two Munster finals. I think obviously in the other final, in the other semi-final, I pray for Tipperary. But the reality is Cork there was probably too much made of a win played in a hurricane stroke storm stroke monsoon where the score was 10 points apiece at full time. And there were horrendous conditions and they got a fluky enough goal. I think if you look at what's happened to Cork since, they kind of stuttered about in Division 2. They saved their bacon on the last day out, obviously, against Westmeath. However much you can read into league form. But the bigger problem for them is that it doesn't look like Sean Powter is going to be fit in defence. He gives them so much energy and dynamism coming from the backs. They've lost Killian O'Hanlon at midfield. He seemed to be a good partner for Ian Maguire. Now, they're trying everybody. They've tried Paul Walsh. They've tried a couple of other lads. They don't seem to be able to find a solid midfield partnership. They've lost Kieran Sheehan permanently, as much as you might have got out of him towards the back end of his career. And now Cathal O'Mahony, who was somebody that I would have had a lot of time for, who I think was an emerging talent, and he's gone for the season with a hamstring. So I think that's probably served to level up a playing field whereby you're going in against a Limerick side that I think have actually made massive strides forward and huge improvements. I know they got a bit of a trimming from Derry, but they weren't the first and last level to get a trimming from Derry this year. And as we all know, Derry were very fit, right? They were very fit. So I think Limerick are... It's a major, major banana skin. And if there was an upset, if you could call it that, to happen this weekend, and I'm not, as I said, playing the poor mouth at all, I think that it could easily happen in the Gaelic grounds on Saturday.
Yeah, I would say, Cord, that the football championship's crying out for an upset. It's been pretty predictable and pedestrian thus far, and we saw the shot in the arm the hurling championship got at the weekend when the Dubs overturned Galway, and, you know, it's as Roy said, it's not beyond the realms, but it mightn't be quite the seismic shock of Dublin beating Galway in the hurling. But at the same time, would you give Limerick a shot, seeing as, you know, they've had one outing? They managed to score 418 against Waterford, which is, you know, it's a good way to come into a game. And they seem like a very settled team with a very sensible manager. And they just, maybe they are the right team to be facing Cork right now.
Yeah, no, I do agree with Rory. I think it's any match of the weekend, if you think that, you know, that the underdog going in, I do think Limerick are probably one. If you look at the rest of the matches, you probably think the rest of the underdogs, maybe Derry against Donegal, but I do think Limerick are one that have a chance in the Gaelic rounds. I suppose you have to look back to last year's championship. They got beaten by Tipperary by a point.
After extra time, that brilliant score.
Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously Tipperary went on to win the Munster final, you know, obviously beating Cork along the way. And, you know, we have to look at Cork's retirements, as Rory said, and their injuries that they have. So, yeah, I do think there's probably a chance for a bit of a shock victory there with Limerick. You know, Cork, you haven't really barred that win against Kerry last year, which obviously that marquee goal, which, you know, was a bit of a fluky enough win.
You can say it, Cora. I won't get upset. Don't worry.
Don't worry. I've talked to Merrick a few times about it. He'd say the same. But yeah, it is a one place that you could do see that Cork could get beaten. The only thing is that it's Limerick had a game under the belt, which always helps. But you know, you presume after last year's shock defeat to Tipperary in the Munster final that Cork will win, and you know they'll be really worried about this game, and they won't be in any way complacent. But yeah, if you look at the five matches over the weekend, it's the one match that you'd look at that you wouldn't be hugely shocked that if Limerick got victory over Cork. Yeah.
And just one other point on it, Mikey, and I think it's an important one as well to make. There was a concerted effort. Like, Limerick have always been associated for being a hurling-only county and not really given a tuppence worth for football. They're, from what I gather, they are making a concerted effort. They are really going to put a big effort into football and to try and establish themselves as a proper dual county. And they've put some good people in place now to try and develop their underage. And they have made good strides already in terms of their conditioning. I know Paul Kinnerk is having a bit of an influence there. And obviously, we know him from the hurling side of it. And he is a Gaelic footballer. So I think Limerick will improve. Will it be enough to beat Cork? Maybe not this week. But like, I think that will be tight. I think it'll be a competitive match. I would expect it to be competitive. Absolutely.
Yeah. How about yourself, Oisin? Are we sometimes guilty of maybe bigging up Cork a little bit more than they deserve, because they are the, you know, the number two team in Munster, and no more than in Leinster. We want to see a province with a bit of a challenge. And last year, you know, they gave us what we kind of wanted. They managed to shock Kerry, but then in their very next game, they conspired to lose to a Tipperary team who are now in Division 4. So do we expect too much from Cork? Are we just looking for a proper rival for Kerry where maybe there isn't one?
Well, I think it's fair to say that I have not talked up Cork since 2010.
That is fair. I've been listening as well, Oisin.
I've been probably more critical than most about Cork, because I cannot believe that that they can't harness the talent in a better way, and I think it's actually sinful what has happened in the last number of years in Cork. They look as if there's some sort of shape or make to it now. I do believe, having watched Cork a couple of times, that they are trying to play in a certain way, but it never seems to materialise for 70 minutes. I think that under this management, there's a defined way that they want to play. They want to get bodies back behind the ball whenever they're able to slow it down in the middle of the field. But that's something they're having a real trouble doing, and that is slowing it down in that area between the two 45s. And until they start doing that and start making that more of a war zone than it has been, I think they're going to continue to ship big, big scores, and they're going to continue to struggle. And I agree with Rory, it is a potential banana skin, but it's a potential banana skin for Limerick. And the reason why I think that is because they have a definitive way in which they play. That doesn't change regardless of who to play. The only thing I'm worried about, as far as Lim is concerned, is can they get the consistency? Sometimes you think that they are over reliant on one or two players to get scores. They don't get much from the half back line, from the middle of the field, and if they start doing that, I mean, they can run amok in a team, especially a team like Cork, who are fairly
open. Confidence.
Yeah, fairly open. I seen Cathal O'Mahony coming in, and I thought, right, okay, so Cork now have, you know, somebody who can just come off the shoulder and kick simple scores without a major fuss being made about it, without having to kick it 40 yards outside of his boot or anything else. He just looked like somebody who's just going to come in, he's just going to do exactly what it said in the tin, he's going to kick the ball over the bar. He's a massive miss for them. I think they're missing a lot of experience. I think Powder's obviously a huge miss as well. It's a very close game. I think of all the games of the weekend, potential of extra time, potential of penalties, I think that if anybody wants to go and watch a game which is very evenly matched at the weekend, I think this could be the one to watch.
Okay. In a word, then, we'll call it. I'm going to say Limerick because, you know, I'm the romantic here. But how do you see it going, Cora, in a word?
Yeah, I'm going to back the underdogs, Limerick. I think it wasn't said there. Like, obviously, Cork have had a lot of retirements from last year. Paul Kerrigan, obviously, Kieran Sheehan now got injured. The Moss Clancy and James Rockery. If it becomes tight, do they have that leadership? I read an article from Brian Hurley saying that he's now one of the oldest players at 29 in the panel. That's the case. If it becomes tight, have they enough people to drag the team over the line? So, yeah, I think I'll give Limerick the vote, a hesitant vote, but yeah, I think they can beat them.
Okay, Oisin.
Yeah, with risk of being absolutely annihilated for the fact that, you know, Cork I have the possibility of also, you know, turning it on up front, and you know, certain individuals up there can really hurt you, but I'm going to go with Limerick. I just think over 75, 80 minutes, structure, knowing how they want to play and having a definitive role and being able to stick to it, I think I'm going to go for Limerick.
Sorry, Roy, you're already outnumbered, but...
Could I just make one? Listen, yeah, and I think they're very fair comments. There's just one last thing, because I know, look, we're over Corking it here, but I do think the time is coming soon. For the county board to bite the bullet and maybe look at outside influences. I know Keane O'Neill is there, but he's there already. But, you know, to look at somebody like Kieran McGeaney or Colm Collins or one of these managers that can come in and really shake things up. I think for too long, we've put our own people in charge. And I know they're all doing their best, but it's just patently not good enough, you know. And maybe it's time for a fresh pair of eyes to come in with a neutral view of things and say, look, lads, we're going to tear this thing completely from the bottom down to the top up. We're going to tear it all up and we're going to start all over again. And that might help in some ways. But
would somebody win,
I'd say, on Saturday would be the most that we could hope for.
Rory, would somebody even in the ilk of a Kieran Donaghy going to Armagh, would that be enough to make a definitive difference, do you think?
I don't know about a Kerry man wearing her crest.
No, I mean,
that might be a bit like, too far.
like somebody from Ulster coming down, like, Paddy Talley or something, somebody like that coming down. Maybe that's not the...
It's just a time just for a small bit of a refresh. And look, I think it's great. There's great people in there at the board level now, and I think look, eventually it will the ship will turn. But
okay,
but the most we can hope for is, as I said, a stuttery couple of points win and scrape into a Munster final.
It's a crying shame that we have to do this, but we're going to fairly skirt over the other Munster semi-final, which is a shame because we're talking about the reigning Munster champions here.
The only thing we're talking about there, Mikey, is whether or not Clifford is fully fit and how much Kerry will win by. That's it, really.
Yeah, because what you're looking at here, Cora, really, is Munster champions who lost the Division 3 relegation playoff to a Longford team who last weekend shipped 422 to Meath. So going up against who we consider to be the only proper rivals to the All-Ireland champions, Dublin, and Kerry, as they've displayed through the league and in their opening round match, they're being ruthless. They're, you know, they're kind of putting their foot on the throat and they're leaving it there for 75 minutes.
Yeah, this is one game, probably along with the Mayo Leitrim game, that are probably foregone conclusions. So, you know, I know Peter Keane won't want to think that going in, but, you know, obviously they're going to go out and, you know, just worry about putting up a good performance again and you know, and getting their unit and their lines working. They're a joy to watch in their league semi-final against Tyrone. Their first half, you know, I just love watching the way they move. Their forward line are so dynamic. And they've some of the best young talent, you know, and obviously Sean O'Shea and David Clifford, and, you know, the guys that work around them, you know, Clifford's older brother, Paddy, and, you know, they're just superb to watch. So I suppose from that point of view, even if they're playing Tipperary, you just love to see them, you know, perform and play. But yeah, I do think it's a foregone conclusion. You know, obviously Tipperary from the heights of last year, you know, to see themselves and Cavan, the Ulster champions from last year, to get relegated to Division 4, yeah, I do think it's just another tick the box exercise for Kerry, you know, get into a Munster final. I think it's a bit like that, you know, they're not going to be really tested till the last four. But yeah, I'm sure Peter Keane will want to, you know, continue to play the way they're playing and get his best out of them. And as Rory said, whether they risk Clifford or not, you know, it's probably not a match that they need to risk them, but. Yeah, I just think it's going to be, you know, a really, it's probably going to be a hammering for Tipperary, which is, you know, obviously not what we want to see. But, you know, Kerry are the contenders, one and only contenders to Dublin at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, should we have a cautionary tale of risking, you know, a not fully fit talisman from Donegal a couple of weeks ago. So Peter Keane, probably best to keep Clifford's powder dry for the weekend. You'd imagine that he shouldn't be needed, I guess, is the crux of the issue.
He shouldn't be needed, but Peter Keane, you'll see from what we've seen the whole way through the league, is that if Clifford's fit, he'd play him. You know, I think if there's any discussion around, you know, whether he's 100% fit or not, it'd be stupid to play him. But the nature of what I looked at the injury, you know, another week or two would do that absolutely no harm. But I think if he's fit, like Kerry don't even like to take him off, you know, even when they're winning well, regardless of the situation. So yeah, I think Peter Keane, you know, wants to play him, but he doesn't need to play him this weekend. You know, I mean, like Cora talks about the movement. I mean, the movement is sensational, and having a runner in at 14 has worked for him, whether that be Darren Winan or Spillane or whoever ends up in there. I mean, just having that and having that man to come out, you know, and try and get on that first phase of the ball, and then, you know, walk the two boys after that. It's just worked so well for him, like, and leaves a lot more room in there for whoever ends up in there. Interesting to see, you know, Sean O'Shea playing alongside Clifford for a while as well. So, look, there's so many options, and the bench looks strong this year as well, I thought. But yeah, look, they'll win that game very, 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 very comfortably.
Okay, I think that's enough said about that game. It's a shame to say.
I'd make them favourites, actually, Mikey. I'd make Kerry favourites for the All-Ireland now.
I thought you were going to say you make them favourites for the Tipperary game. This is that. Well, that's a ballsy
I'd make them favourites. The Cluxton thing is a game changer for me, and I would make Kerry favourites to win the All-Ireland. I don't know. I'm sure the bookies might differ, and they're wealthier people than I'll ever be.
Yeah. Well, we might leave that discussion until they get over the hurdle of Tipperary. Because we've the small matter of a couple of games in Ulster. Actually, let's finish with the Ulster games. Let's mention the other foregone conclusion now, Cora, because you did mention it. Leitrim v Mayo. We were talking to Ken McSay about this here last week. Like, Mayo are going to land in the Connacht final here knowing no more than they knew at the end of the league, really, it's fair to say, isn't it? Sligo and Leitrim are... It's no way to prepare for a match against Galway, really, is it? It's a traditional way, but it's not really a real world way.
No, it's certainly not. And I think being in Division 2 of the league as well, while, you know, there's talks here in Mayo, you know, it's good to breathe the youngsters. And, you know, obviously they got bounced back up Division 1 pretty quickly, but they haven't played any standard of team yet. When you look at the opponents they played in Division 1, and obviously they have played Sligo and Leitrim, you know, and obviously it'll be, it's Galway now in the kind of final. So, that's where you'd be slightly a little bit worried that they're not going to be tested going into a Connacht final. How good did Galway look the last day against Roscommon, who, you know, who were very poor and, you know, didn't really go out to win the game. So it's very difficult. You know, I do think whoever out of Connacht will land into the All-Ireland semi-final, it's going to be very difficult because they're not, bar the Connacht final, that'll be really their first test. So, yeah, well, obviously there's high hopes. The performance against Sligo, you know, it was very good. And, you know, the performance for a while against Clare in the league semi-final was good. But that Mayo team, the one thing you'd say, you know, they're young and they're new. They're still very settled. You know, I've done their Mayo Leitrim game last year. And I think from last year, there's maybe two or three changes to the team that played Sligo. And, you know, that's David Clerk and Rob Hinley. Obviously, Clerk, he has retired. And, you know, the only real new ones in is Inda Heshen, who came in and made his championship debut against Sligo. And then, obviously, Darren McHale, he came on again, a sub last year against Leitrim. So they're a very settled team. You know, the biggest, you know, talking point here in Mayo, obviously, in the last number of weeks has been the injury to Killian O'Connor. And I really don't think Mayo are going to see the full effects to that injury until later on in the championship, whether it's kind of final stage or further on. You know, they're obviously not missing him now. You know, Darren McHale done very well when he came in the last day. And, you know, obviously Aidan done very well, kind of moving between 11 and 14. But, you know, that was against a very poor Sligo team. I really don't think we're going to see the loss of Killian O'Connor when it comes to the bigger days and the pressure moments. And whether that's from, you know, frees or 45s or from open play, I think that's where his loss is going to be immense to Mayo. But I don't think that'll be obviously seen. It's not going to be seen against Leitrim. So, yeah, again, it's a foregone conclusion for James Horan. I think he played probably, he's trying to have a very settled team at the moment, so it'll be pretty much the same as the last day. You know, he's kind of keeping to the same 19-20, obviously looking towards Galway in a couple of weeks' time.
Oisin, you played, obviously, in the bear pit of the Ulster Football Championship, even when you were a very, very dominant team. But you must have examples from your career of a match where, like Mayo here, you're going in, and you know that barring lightning strike or a bus crash or something, you know, you're going to win the match and you're going to win it pulling up. Is it difficult or to kind of, if not motivate yourself, is it difficult to give the best to yourself, or do you think, or is it just a matter of you're pulling on your county jersey, you have to do your living best no matter who you're playing? But like, after making mincemeat of Sligo, like, they know they're now coming up against a team of a similar level or inferior to Sligo, and that must play on the mind in some way.
Yeah, I think, though, you know, the fact that, you know, they can see it coming, I think the big thing for them is what can they get out of the game? I mean, you know what I mean? And there's not a massive amount they can get out of it. As an individual, I used to see it as a good opportunity to get the averages up a wee bit. but I think for Mayo, it's another opportunity maybe to get, you know, the free take, and whether that, whoever that is going to be, whether that be Tommy Conroy or whoever it's going to be, but to give them another day out, you know, I understand it's not a massive pressurized situation, but it's still championship football and they still have to be kicked. So, you know, Cora mentioned about the fact that they have a settled team and they're working towards a settled team. They've also traded a lot of players. You know, they're kicking the ass of 40 players now in 18 months, you know, that have played some sort of football. And I think that in the search for somebody to replace Killian will definitely help them. I am under no illusions how big a mess Killian O'Connor is, but sometimes it's amazing how things like this can work. And even just that movement of Aidan O'Shea and the fact that he's got an added responsibility now. Like, Aidan O'Shea went through seasons, maybe getting 1 and 2 points. You know, that's not good enough for a player. Like, when he played minor football, like, he was the main scorer. He was, you know, he played a full forward. Like, he has the ability to do that. He has the ability to cause a bit of a rack in there. And, you know, if the supporting cast is good enough, you know, I still think that, there's an opportunity for, you know, if Dublin are where we think they are, there's an opportunity for Mayo as this thing progresses. But, like, what did Kinde get out of the weekend? They can't get a lot out of it, but they can just make it about themselves. You know, like, it beats a training session and just get as many individuals comfortable in their own positions as they possibly can. You know, who's going to be a main man marker? Obviously, Oisin Mullen has stepped into that that role really well. So just another game for some of those younger lads, and maybe somebody will put their hand up at the weekend, and that's another option for them come the bigger games. But other than that, you don't get a big pile out of those games.
Yeah,
they deserve an awful lot of credit. I think they have more or less regenerated the team, away from the spotlight. A lot of people, were writing the epitaph of Mayo football after they lost the All-Ireland final, however many All-Ireland finals they've lost, and they're saying that's the end of it. And here they are back. And they've regenerated. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see what the championship team that gets picked to actually take the field on Sunday and compare it even to the team that took to the field last December and some of the notable absentees and some of the more established players that now are sort of drifting to the fringes. Colin Boyle, Keith Higgins, all these guys, they're now no longer central figures, and he's brought in a whole raft of new guys. I think he deserves a huge amount of credit. And I think Cora made a good point. I think they've been helped by the fact that they were down in Division 2, so they were able to road test a lot of these young lads and get miles and get minutes into them and make sure that they're cut out for inter-county football. And I look, they may not be contenders to go and win the All-Ireland this year, but they're building again. They're building a really, really good panel and a good side again. And, look, if Killian comes back next year, and even this year, I think we're in for a fabulous Connacht final. And in terms of Sunday, what can they get out of it? Road test a few kick-out strategies, get more minutes into lads, avoid injuries, and move on.
Yeah, we'll move on.
I think I get the feeling, just from afar, from looking in, they don't look as battered and bruised as they have been, going into all our championship campaigns. And I think that is the nature of playing in maybe Division 2. And obviously, they don't have to play above themselves in that division. And obviously,
and a younger profile as well. A younger profile as well probably helps,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. For Tyrone, Cavan here, Cora, are we pretty much reading a Kerry Tipperary situation? Maybe not quite as extreme, but Cavan have had an atrocious time since staying on Dublin's coattails for about 38 minutes of an All-Ireland semi-final. And since then, it's just been, it's been shocking. And Tyrone are a long way from the finished article. But if, reports of McShane, being back fully fit, or at least regaining match fitness, are to be believed, you have to imagine that Tyrone are just going to have too much for their Division 4 opponents here.
Yeah, I, again, Cavan are very much like Tipperary. Obviously winning Ulster last year was massive for them, and they're all Ireland semi-final against Dublin. But as you said, since then, it's been a very difficult league for them. Obviously getting relegated to Division 4, going from Ulster champions to being relegated to Division 4. And now to have to come up against a Tyrone team in the first match in Ulster, it's going to be extremely difficult. Even though you'd look at and worry for Tyrone after they're hammering against Kerry in the league, but as we've spoken already, Kerry are a different class. I just think Tyrone are going to have way too much attacking prowess for his Cavan defence. I think they're well set up. I think since the two boys have come in, they've done a very, very good job, both Brian Doerr and Fergal Logan. I do think they're trying to obviously change the style of play that they're playing, that Tyrone played under Mickey Hart, and obviously that takes time to change that. And obviously with the condensed league, that's very, very difficult. I do think, it's very much like the Tipperary-Kerry game. It's probably a foregone conclusion, where I do think that Cavan, obviously, are a little bit of a better football inside than Tipperary are. I do still think that Tyrone is just going to have way too much for them. And as we spoke, if Colin McShane is back, and by all accounts he is, he's a huge boost, for Tyrone, the football he was playing before he got injured, not last year, the year before, was amazing. So, I do think it's a foregone conclusion, and Tyrone will be looking forward.
Yeah. Tyrone, kind of mixed bag, I suppose, in the league. Is McShane exactly what they were missing? Is he exactly what they need? Have they been building the game plan, assuming that he'd be back, he'd slot in, and he would be, he would be the final building block?
Well, I think if a fully fit Cathal McShane in the Kerry game has a bit of a field there. Kerry, marked 1-on-1, 2-on-2 that day. Jason Foley was exceptional, but you know, we were kicking hay ball into, you know, Darren McCurry, you know, Mark Bradley come onto the field. Didn't seem to be much nuance to it. It's not helped by a couple of the Tyrone boys who like to get the lace out of it out the field and have been used to that and like to pass sideways or backwards. And look at that. That's the way they've been playing for some time, and it's going to take, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time to change those habits. But once the penny drops, I mean, like, again, squad-wise and the players they have coming on, Darragh Calvert is a miss because they need somebody to link the play. They haven't really, you know, had that. So it was, you know, if you look at Niall Sludden in the years, if you look at him 16, 17, 18, maybe even 19, and since that, he's sort of been on the wing, he's been in and out of the team, and they haven't really replaced that. And Darragh Calvert looked good at 11, even for the 10 minutes or whatever he played against Kerry, looks as if he was going to make a difference. He's very intelligent on the ball. And so they'll miss him because I think, you know, he won't be back for some time yet. McShane is exactly what they need. But I think the other point on Tyrone is that when I look at Cavan and the way Cavan's set up and the individuals that Cavan have, I'm not 100% sure that this Cavan team won't fancy it a little bit, having, you know, when Mickey Graham watches the way they played against Kerry,
they have an advantage at midfield as well, I would suggest, Osh.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if you see a fairly agricultural approach from Mickey Graham, where every kick out is just lamped out into that middle, make it a war out there and take their chances on, you know, basically having the power and maybe experience just to get their hands on some primary possession. Now, I still don't know if it'll be good enough, but you would imagine if there's anything going to come out of Cavan for 2021, it has to come out on Saturday, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I also think, allied to the fact that they'll have an edge in the middle of the field, I think if Tyrone end up playing two men up front, Pádraig Faulkner is no slouch. Killian Clark has the, you know, he has it in him to blank somebody out of the game. It's that middle area that, you know, it's the half back line, it's the half forward line. If you could stop a lot of those runners, or at least slow them down in whatever agricultural way you want to do that for them, fair enough. I suppose that the one thing is, like, you know, Tyrone are not playing against Kerry, so they're not playing against a team with the same sort of quality up front. But the likes of Madden or O'Reilly or these boys can hurt you, but just not at the same level as things. So they'll have to be, Cavan will have to be good at the back. Their individual matchups will have to be good at the back. When you talk about lamping it out to the middle of the field, Rory, I watched Fermanagh last week. They had a definitive strategy for all of the fact that they were wiped out in many other areas. They kicked the ball long in the middle of the field and they won it. They won the majority of their kickouts, 75 or 80% of their kickouts, and they refused to go short, you know, because they felt physically, you know, as if they get stripped of the ball coming out, or what you know, the fact that Monaghan were pushing up a good bit. And but so that is one area where if you fancy yourself, then why not? Why not clear your lanes? Why not get it out to 65 or 70 yards and then back yourself to win it? And if you can win enough of them, and you can get them on the break, then before Tyrone are able to get bodies back, then that might be the route to success. But I just wouldn't completely write Cavan off. And then the other caveat to all of this is Cavan's record against Tyrone in the championship is nothing short of horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous. I think it won one game in 25 or 30 years. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, that obviously comes against them, but look, I don't know how much that has to play. But I would definitely expect a big, big, massive kick from Cavan.
Okay, but we have to move quickly now. Is anybody predicting a Cavan win? I'm not. No. Anybody, Cavan? No. Okay. No. But I take it all on board. They were crap in the league last year as well, and they won the bloody Ulster title. So, you know, you don't want to read too much into that either. The other game then is, regular listeners will know I have a bit of a graw for Derry. But even I don't give them that much of a chance against Donegal's side, who are Cora, I think they're still kind of figuring themselves out, which is a mad thing to say about a team who've kind of been operating at the top level for as long as they have, especially under their current manager. But, you know, Donegal, they're still maybe ironing out a few kinks, but at the end of the day, they're playing against a Division 3 side who obviously won promotion to Division 2 pretty easy. But it's a Rory Gallagher side as well, so Derry will know exactly what they're coming up against, and they will be coached within an inch of their life.
Yeah, I really like this Donegal side. Obviously, watching them against Down a couple of weeks ago. Again, they have a very interesting forward line now. I think, you know, while, you know, Murphy is key, and, you know, again, what way he's like with his injury, whether he play or not. I don't think he is key, but he's not as key as he used to be. I think they have some, you know, very, very good young talent up there, and guys that can get on. Obviously, McBurity has been around for a long time, with the likes of Lang and O'Donnell and Padraig Morgan, and, you know, they're just very exciting. I think they're, you know, very kind of mobile. While they're very quick, but they're also very mobile and strong, a forward line. I just think that, yeah, they were very exciting the last against Down, you know, those periods of the game, yeah, where they're up and down. But, you know, to kick 2:25 with Michael Murphy being off the pitch for, you know, a good, you know, 40 minutes of the game, I think that's very exciting. You know, and I do think they have some very exciting talent in the half back line and in the full back line. Obviously, Ryan McHugh being their main man, he seems to be, you know, back in real form again. So, yeah, like, obviously, you know, watch Donegal or Derry versus Offaly in Division 3 league final. You know, they were awesome that day, didn't give Offaly a kick. So it's very difficult to know where Derry at. They have some, you know, some very exciting talent. But I just think that Donegal are so much further down the line of their development. And, you know, while Derry under Gallagher seems to be getting their, you know, their house in order and starting to develop, I just think Donegal are so far down the line. And I just think they're playing to a very good system. And probably after Kerry, after Dublin, Kerry, Donegal, probably Mayo sit next in the pecking order. So, yeah, I just think, you know, we looked at, you know, goalkeeping, we talk about Stephen Cluxton. I think Donegal are probably one of the next best keepers in Sean Patton, and his kickouts the last day against Down were just amazing, and it was the platform for them to set up an attack. And yeah, I just really like their style of play as well. So I just think they're going to have way too much for Derry too.
One thing we'll say, I'd say, Oisin, it's very unlikely Donegal will score 2:25.
Yeah, well, Derry have been particularly stingy this year and giving away scores, but honestly, like, in that game against Down, like, I would say Down were throwing cartwheels after 22 minutes. It was 7-5. And but it's just incessant. Donegal are incessant. And the reason why they're incessant is because any forward is not doing it. They're just bringing somebody else on. And you know, like, you look at the talent that they have on the bench, and in particular up front, I understand they have massive frailties in defence, massive frailties. Even when they get bodies back, you know, their ability to get tackles in is criminal. It must be keeping Beckham Bond the other end of the field. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Jimmy Brennan can't get a game. You know what I mean? That gives you an idea. Come on, score 1-2 last day. I feel as if you know, teams who are really well structured and put a really good plan together, there's still an inevitability about them falling short because of, as I say, the incessant nature of the way that the Division One teams play, and the ability of the boys coming off the bench to make an immediate impact. Not to sit around and wait, and every one of them's coming on trying to prove a point. And that's what I found on last day. I thought when Down got the goal straight after half time, I said to myself, well, there's going to be an air of respectability at least about the score. But after that, Donegal just scored at will and just kept pounding forward, and just, you know, the ability was very, very, I was very impressed in the last day, you know. But look, as I say, they still have frailties, you know, in defence. And Derry got plenty of scores against them because McGuigan is different gravy. But as far as beating them, I can't see it. And for me, that's a bit of a worry about football in general. When I see a county structured in the way Derry have structured it, willing to give, willing to bring a manager in, surround him with lots of good people, give him everything that he wants as far as you know, sports science and all those things. And Derry has restructured from underage right up. They won a minor title obviously last week as well, and also title. So they are doing everything right. So imagine if Derry go out this weekend and get a real hammer. What does that say about, you know, where the rest of us are at? Do you know what I mean? So I think this is a big weekend for a number of reasons, and not just because of, you know, this one-off game, but just because of, you know, Derry doing everything right, have all the players in the change room that they want, and yet could still conceivably take a bit of a pacing.
Yeah. Rory, we have been kind of enamored by Derry, and you know that, you know, you look through the lines and they've got talent in every, you know, everywhere. Their midfield is excellent, Glass and Emma Bradley, and obviously Shane McGuigan, we mentioned, is phenomenal man against the Mass defence. He's got lots of practice at it. But the reality is they were playing in Division 3 and now they're coming up against, you know, over the course of the last 7-8 years, you'd have to say one of the top 4 teams in the country. And the gulf in class, you know, in the haves and have-nots in Gaelic football, as Oisín said, we could see that being made very apparent on Sunday.
Yeah, but I give them a good chance, actually. I really do. I think if you look back, I do. It's our big game. It's our doubleheader. As our doubleheader on Sunday, Cora is on the panel with us and looking forward to it. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to this. I think it will be competitive. I mean, I absolutely hear what Oisín says. There's a scariness in the options that Donegal can pick from. And obviously, the new rule has made one-on-one defending slightly more necessary now, and maybe they're being a little bit exposed for lack of pace, particularly in that full back line. But I give Derry a chance on the basis that, I mean, Donegal are not Dublin and they're not Kerry. They're capable of poor performances and they're capable of poor patches within performances as well, where I think Derry can make hay. We only have to go back to last year's Ulster final, which I still maintain Donegal blew. So I don't think they're without hope. I think it's, again, an apps. Somebody's going to have to try and explain to me why the match is in Ballybuffet and why it's not in a neutral venue. But look, that's another day's scale. But I do give them a chance. I think Gallagher will have them primed. I think he'll aim for one big championship scalp, and that'll be a mark of progress from his point of view. And I give them a chance. I think that, will it be enough? If Murphy plays and if Murphy's fit, probably not. But if Murphy's not fit and if Murphy doesn't play, again, that just levels up the playing field a little bit more. It's a derby, which will definitely mean that they'll be up for it, and there shouldn't be any lacking motivation, you know. So,
okay.
And as Oisín said, they have been bolstered and filliped by a minor title during the week, which, you know, they don't win that many Derry at underage level. So, no, I think this will be close, and we're still praying for that first extra time of penalties live on TV.
Got plenty of it in the
Euros. Maybe it's this week. Who knows?
Maybe. We have to finish up now, but sorry, Cor, just a quick mention. Obviously, the TG Cahir Ladies Football Championship starts this weekend. A couple of weeks ago here, Rory made the rather astute and geeky analogy that Kerry toppling Dublin is a bit like, you know, kind of Voldemort coming along and getting rid of Darth Vader for you. Are we kind of looking at a similar situation in the ladies' football, that Cork are really the only challengers to Dublin? So it'll be change, but not really change.
Not great change.
even if Dublin are toppled.
Yeah. Whether even Cork are the real challengers, I just find it very difficult to see if there's any challengers to Dublin. I do think Cork are probably there. I still think they're 5 or 10% away, they're missing something. And I do think there's probably a bunch after that, with Mayo, probably Donegal, Galway, who I'm thinking every year should be doing well. But, you know, obviously the league this year is very disappointing, and probably someone like the likes of Armagh, that maybe, but they're still, you know, as I said, Cork are probably 5 to 10% away from Dublin, and the rest are probably even a little bit further. Yeah, they're just exactly like their men's team, and probably even in a stronger position. You know, obviously watch them in their league semi-final against Mayo, and you know, they gave them a nice hammering, and then obviously in the league final against Cork, and you know, there's inevitability about the game, even though Cork was up there for long periods. Yeah, they're just unearthing talent and bringing talent back. Obviously, Hannah Terrell coming back from rugby. You know, Sinead Godric obviously come back from Australia. She didn't feature in the league. She had an operation on her hamstring, but by all accounts, will be back for some part of the championship. It's just, yeah, they're phenomenal. Again, it's like the strong Dublin, their bench is amazing. The players that they're bringing along, and Bowen is just... has them at another level. And, you know, I keep talking about physically wise, and like the Donegal men's forwards team, they're very physical, you know, and very quick and well and very mobile. And I think that's where they are at the moment. So, you know, they're not going to get caught in the group stage. And you know, I just can't see them being beaten. You know, it'd have to be maybe at a quarterfinal would be the time to pip them or something like that. But yeah, it's certainly Dublin and probably a chasing pack of four or five after that. But yeah, I just can't see Dublin being beaten this year, and not as long as Bowen is in charge and the core group stay together, and that right. seems to be happening.
Okay, thanks for a grim outlook. We'll keep an eye on it during the season, obviously, and chat to you again about it. Okay, Oisín, Cora, thank you very much. We have a couple of eager hurling men waiting in the wings to get in here, so we'll bid you adieu, and we'll hope we get a shock or a couple of close games or something this weekend, because that was a grim enough outlook from you.
Thanks, so, starting Gaelic Rose.
best of luck, folks. Thanks very much.
See you guys.
Welcome back. We've been joined by Derek McGrath and former intercounty referee Barry Kelly to look at the hurling from last weekend and midweek, I'm afraid to say. How are you doing, lads?
Good, man of honour.
Good, thanks. Thanks, Mickey.
Good stuff. I say, unfortunately, we have to mention midweek because we've had quite a shock last night in the Leinster Under 20 Hurling Championship with Kildare beating Wexford dramatically in injury time, 16 points to 112. Derek, you've done a bit of work down in Laois, and like most people from traditional hurling counties, you're quick and willing to kind of spread the gospel, so to speak. Would you have much familiarity about with the work that's been done in Kildare in the last few years?
Yeah, ironically, actually, I'm involved with the Laois Minors, who are actually playing Kildare tonight in Newbridge. so you know, we know what we're facing. Well, just from a club level, I suppose. Club De La Salle were in the fail at A semi-final years ago. We were run over by Turlough Moore, but we played an ace in the run-up to that particular competition, a really, really strong, dominant ace side. And Wexford side as well, it's important to note, I suppose, that would be backbone by the Leinster Championship winning team of a couple of years ago. I would be involved with the Harriers. There was four lads involved last night from the Harriers. They're a serious team. You know, it's not just a kind of a turn up performance. It's a performance that's really merited against a really good team. So I think people on the outside might see it as a shock, if you like. I think it's just genuine good people without being patronized. It's very hard to get the balance right between being patronized. This is work that's gone on over a long period in lots of hurling clubs in Kildare, and the work is genuine and it's real, and there's really good talent there.
Yeah. Barry, you'd have a lot of, you know, you'd have refereed all sorts, I suppose. Would you have seen from, say, the start of your career towards the end of it, would you have seen the gap narrowing, if maybe not in results, at least in the standard of hurlers, the standard of coaching, and you'd see those non-senior, the non-traditional counties, like, is that a boat that's raising across the country, or are we looking at, like, you know, our moments here, like Westmeath beating Kilkenny a few years ago and this result last night?
Yeah, look, you'd love to see that the rising tide is lifting all boats, Mikey, but I suppose the National League just gone by, and why the National League might be a bit of an outlier now on the basis of last weekend's results, because obviously teams put league form behind them and the league was basically, I think, no more than a series of challenge games. But like Westmeath got serious trimmings in Division 1A of the National League, like, and you know, we'd see ourselves, look, we're going to know this Saturday in Mullingar, because we're actually playing Kildare, and I think Westmeath are perceived at the moment, Mikey, as being probably the favourites maybe now for the McDonagh Cup, having
Joe
beaten
Kildare. Yeah.
And, you know, and it'd be a little bit of, you know, among maybe people who just take a casual glance at it, that Westmeath should beat Kildare. But I think Westmeath themselves, a bit like Derek said there, are aware that there's a lot of a lot of people have moved into Kildare. Obviously, the county has probably seen a huge boom in population. And people might be wondering, in a football sense, Mikey, that Kildare footballers would be expected to be better with the huge rise in population and a traditional football county. But in actual fact, the hurling, particularly, as Derek said, the Naas Kyle Dove side, is that a lot of people from, say, Tipperary and Galway have moved into Kildare, are settled in Kildare in these big towns now, and are now putting the shoulder to the wheel, or have been for a number of years. So, like, we're not, Westmeath are certainly not complacent. I think we have to lose by fewer than 4 points on Saturday to qualify for the final. But last night's result might be a good thing for Westmeath, because it certainly can't, we can't be complacent. The other thing that's remarkable too was that 13 men at the end of the game versus 15. Yeah. I mean, you would expect nearly that Rex would be down to 13 and were caught. And plus, I did see the winning score. It was a fantastic score. It wasn't like...
Yeah, right on the sideline, yeah.
Absolutely amazing score. Like, so, you like, it's like fair dues. Look, it's great to see. I wouldn't like to see what the spread bet was in the game last night beforehand, but I'd say now... a lot of people got caught out there.
I'd say
so. You just hope though, Mikey, that they see this as an opportunity to push on as well. And far too often, we see one-off big victories like this, and they're just not backed up. Like, they've good opportunity now. They're playing Offaly on Tuesday night, and no, Offaly, I think they had a reasonably good minor side at that level. But at the same time, there wouldn't be much between Wexford and Offaly at any stage. So I think Kildare now need to see that as a great chance to make a Leinster semi-final. And then that would be significant progress, as opposed to a one-off fluke, you know?
Yeah, I suppose the kind of the perils of development in the less successful counties, you know, we'll be playing for all to see now on Saturday, I suppose, when, you know, Antrim v Laois, it's called a qualifier preliminary round, but they don't like to use the word relegation.
Big game.
But basically, yeah. It's yeah. The biggest game of the year for either of these sides. And Laois, obviously, both of them coming off fairly significant defeats, but you know, Antrim were seen as kind of the Cinderella story of the spring, but it could end in, you know, devastating fashion for them if they can't beat Laois.
Yeah, and I think
could, yeah.
so much went into the Antrim kind of story over the spring, if you like. I felt they were nearly set up against Dublin for a fall, if you like, in terms of just motivation. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see the bounce back, if you like. And Cheddar and Laois are in a different situation, that, you know, it's probably set up for them to get a one-off performance again, like as already referred to, but a kind of performance that, you know, assures that they're in the Leinster Championship next year. It's all in the line despite not going well.
Mm-mm. Yep, Derek has stalled on us.
He's back there. Sorry, go again, Der.
Yeah, we lost you there for a second, Derek.
Oh, apologies, that's apologies. No, I was just making a point, I suppose, that the Antrim story throughout the spring probably, you know, set them up probably for a fall against Dublin. And the irony of it now is that Laois haven't had a fairly horrendous league campaign, only need 175-80 minutes to propel them into the championship for next year. And, you know, I think what Laois should be looking for is to get a good performance, get the victory, and get a decent performance against what we'd probably consider a tier one team without, you know, over-egging it in the qualifiers.
Yeah, and how do you see it going?
I actually fancy Laois. I just think there's a performance in them, a one-off performance in Laois to be able to kind of... I think John Lennon is back training for them. I think there's a couple of fellas back that Cheddar kind of happy to have back, and fellas that kind of, you know, I suppose that were very, very prominent under Eddie Brennan seem to be coming back to the fore over the last 2 weeks and available for them. So I'd say there's, you know, sometimes when there's an air of pessimism, and there is in Laois in the air up there, you know, that sometimes that's the time when you're behind the scenes that you can produce a big performance. And I expect Laois to produce a big performance on Saturday.
Yeah. Rory, you're the man to ask. This is the kind of thing I should ask off air, but I'm now asking while we're recording. So what's the story for next year's Leinster round robin? Is it going to be a 16 competition?
Yeah, it's straight. Yeah, it's as simple as that. It's just going to be 16. It's actually a good thing that it's six teams, because it means no one is on a bye week then. Everybody will play every week, and if there's a rest week, everyone gets a rest. I think that was one of the anomalies that some of the people, when the round robin came in, people found slightly just a little bit of a difficulty with. And Derek will know this better than anyone. He went through it where you might have had two games a break and then three games, or three games a break and then two games. And depending on how war weary you are, you know, the fixture, the schedule could benefit certain teams over other, because the breaks were coming at, you know, more beneficial times. Whereas this six-team format will make sure that everybody is playing every week. So I think that's a good thing. I think in one respect, in relation to that game on Saturday, I think it's a pity that's not on TV. I think it could be a really, really competitive game. I'd expect timber, and I'd expect a strong refereeing performance, I'd say, because he'll have his work cut out, whoever the ref is. Barry, I forgot to have a look there.
Yeah, yeah, it's Sean Clear got the job, yeah.
Oh yeah, well, look, a good ref. So, like, they, you know, he will have his work cut out. It's in Parnell Park as well, which I think is a fabulous ground. I love the place. It's a real cosy ground. It's brilliant for hurling, and it's brilliant for spectators if there's any let in. And geez, it'd be one to really look forward to now.
Yeah,
I think the venue, Mikey, is significant. I didn't realize it was in Parnell Park. Like
Parnell Park, yeah.
Yeah, I think the venue is significant because, look, Derek can know himself from his time with Waterford that Parnell Park brings its own. Now, usually against Dublin, of course, but, you know, it tends to be, it certainly feels like a, you know, a tight pitch. You know, it's a bit like the old Highbury. It mightn't be a tight pitch, but it feels like a tight pitch.
Like that, and yeah.
It might, look, Laois need everything to go in their favour, in a sense that because they've had a poor league campaign, but as Derek mentioned, one big win and it transforms their year and
the whole season.
And Darren Gleeson and the boys in Antrim, suddenly a 5-point league campaign. And yet, you know, it'll feel a bit hollow if suddenly they end up on the wrong end. And I think Laois will be looking forward to Parnell Park. I'd say Antrim would prefer to play it maybe in a ground that maybe was
Navin or somewhere like that.
Yeah, I would think so. So that'll be interesting. I didn't realise that was the venue now. So
yeah, well, look, it's as well as much as any championship match, but like there is real jeopardy here, which I think is something that perhaps can be lacking even in the football championship. You have a lot of mismatches with teams who don't really expect to go any further in their provincial championship. This is a match which is real
no consequence for those teams that don't go any further. Yeah, Mikey, you know what I mean? You're spot on. Yeah.
So look, it's only one hurling game this weekend, but it's worth looking forward to. But the last lads, really, what we're doing here is we're looking back because we've had our first seismic rupture in the GAA championship in terms of a decision made on field by a referee which has really reverberated. Like, people listening to a GAA podcast know we're talking about James Owen's decision to sin bin Aidan McCarthy and award a penalty to Tipperary the other day. I come to you first, Barry. Your initial reaction when watching the game, were you like everybody else saying, how the hell is that a penalty? Or were you saying, well, actually, I've read the rule, and, you know, if James has seen it from a certain angle, then he's perfectly correct to be going for the sin.
Yeah, Mike, you know, I was watching it, 3 11-year-olds in my house, and I was watching it, and my initial reaction was, why is Aidan McCarthy arguing over what is a very blatant yellow card? Like, you'd know from body language of players, you accept it and move on. And then it dawned on me after a few seconds that he's actually, oh no, he's arguing, it's because this looks like it's black or black, yellow, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And I was like, oh no.
But
and
even then, don't call it black in hurling, Barry. Don't call it black, whatever you do. Oh, hurling people don't like that.
And then it just shows you, and one of my main points is there's far too many moving parts in this whole thing, is that even then when I realised he was getting yellow, whatever, that suddenly the referee, James, ran in then. I was going, oh no, now it's a penalty as well. And I was like going, oh, it's just like, so no, like there's no argument about the fact that James, you know, got it wrong. You know, no one, you know, I know someone was quoted, I think it was a Brian Lohan, was quoted saying that no one else in the ground thought it was a yellow card in that situation, or a yellow card meaning a sin bin and a penalty. So look, but I think the main thing is, and I spoke at the Westmeath County Board meeting in favour of this motion, and Westmeath, we were comprehensively outvoted at the meeting, and Westmeath delegates Central Council had to vote then against it, even though it just got through, I think 61-39 on the vote, had to get 60%. So, you know, I could be accused of running with the foxes and hunting with the hounds in a way, because I did vote for it. I do think there does need to be a sanction for cynical play. But I do think that there's too many moving parts in this particular. I think James had to consider too many different things in terms of inside the 20, goals, not a clear goal scoring opportunity. That's important. It's a goal scoring opportunity. And was it cynical? And in actual fact, the one aspect of it that probably James probably feels most aggrieved about is that I don't think it was cynical. I think McCarthy lunged in instinctively. It wasn't a Sean Kavanagh type on McManus years ago. This was, he had the ball, gave it to a teammate lost it, and McCarthy impetuously dived in to try and remedy the situation and ended up pulling the guy down. But it wasn't, there's no way, you know, you can't interpret anyone's thoughts, but there's no way he was thinking, I'm going to pull this guy down because we're in danger here. That wasn't the case.
Interestingly, the word cynical doesn't appear anywhere in the rule. It's Owen Ryan wrote a piece for the RT website yesterday. It was quite interesting on Monday. If one of the following infractions is committed on an attacking player with a goal-scoring opportunity, either inside the 20-meter line or a semicircle arc, A, to pull down an opponent, or B, trip an opponent with hands, arm, leg, foot, or hurley, or C, to use the hurley in a careless manner, the following penalty shall apply. And we know the penalties. So while it was called this, Derek, while it was called the cynical, kind of the cynical fouling rule, the word cynical and cynicism doesn't actually appear anywhere in the rule.
Yeah, look, it's been well debated. I agree with Barry in that I think he's actually trying to dive in to flick the ball away. So I think it was a genuine sin. But whether it thought it was simple. But the interesting thing here, I suppose, is the 61%, you know, I was just thinking about this, you know, in the run-up all week. I was kind of, Joanne actually asked a really good question on either at halftime or at the end of the game on last Sunday to Anna or Anthony or is it Henry? I can't remember who was on it, right? But she kind of said, well, the hurling people voted this truly. And I still think it raises the disparity of thinking between, you know, players' voices and the voice of county board executive at times, you know, or the reps that are in that represent them at Congress. You know, I don't like Kilkenny, Galway, Westmead, Limerick all spoke against it at Congress. Like they spoke openly against it. They said, the DPA actually, Paul Flynn raised the matter a week previous. He said, look, can we not park this for a while when we can have an, you know, in your face, I suppose, open discussion rather than an online discussion about it. And so, you know, I was on record as saying, I think inside the 21, cynical play, a stonewall penalty, a Conor Flood meets Owen Murphy situation, that's a penalty, right? So if we're talking solutions this week, you know, you're talking those type of things where you can't put stonewall in a rule book. You know, I think I'm making the same point, I suppose, as lots of people have made this week. My point is, I just read even what Gerard Hegarty said before it was kind of outlined. He said, look, what they decide, the players don't get asked about these things anyway. And that's what Gerard Hegarty said the week that the rule came into being, if you like. You know, and look, and again, I'll be very open.
Well, can you ask the players though, Derek? Like, no, the players' but, attitude is, the players' attitude by and large is going to be, yeah, sure, let us foul away there. Like,
you no, know, no, like, but I'm not so sure, Rory. I'm not so sure. I think the players' attitude is they care about the game as well. Great, I do. I think there's a body of players that care about, that are trying to get a balance right between it being, you know, courageous and savage, if you like, and kind of, and I think the rules committee, ironically, the last night I was on League Sunday, we were talking, had a debate about this, and the next day, Larry McCarthy actually rang me, the president of the GAA, right? He actually rang me, like, you know, and he said to me, would you be interested in coming on the rules committee? You know, would you be interested in coming on the rules committee? You know, so you can sit back and you can kind of pontificate about it, or you can actually try and make a chance now.
Go in and do something about it, Jeff.
Yeah, so I said, you know, well, I wouldn't mind being part of it. Now, first meeting, I had an exam myself and I wasn't able to go to it, but I think his reasoning, and I was talking to David Hassan about this, was they kind of want the same thing. So it is on trial. I think there's people that are really willing to listen to voices as well, you know, as regards debate. And I can't also help but feel sorry for James Owens on a human level as well. I know it's been said with regard to, I'd have to point out, like we were on the back of a bad decision by Alan Kelly in the Gaelic grounds.
The same end and the same, and Tipperary must have holy water spread down in that goal, I'd say.
Yeah, and look, our whole season kind of, you know, when it was based on that decision, it was kind of, you know, it was our whole season was riding on that decision. And when I saw the steam coming out of Brian's eyes, ears, face, everything last Sunday, I was kind of saying to myself, I was feeling similarly, and I went a different way about it because I didn't want to follow us around for the week. Now, the irony is we were beaten comprehensively the week after, so everyone has their different approach. But on a human level, I do concur with what Don Logue said on Sunday night about it being a mistake, albeit a mistake that is very costly.
And I think that's a really good point as well, and I was delighted Don Logue made it because, look, as you may or may not know, I was lucky enough on the 2019 final to be able to be given a listen for the referee, and I could hear what the referee was communicating. Now, funnily enough, I saw some commentators throwing around this rubbish that, like, he's an attention seeker, like James Owens. Now, I can tell you this much from what I was listening to. The last thing that James Owens is an attention seeker. In fact, he doesn't actually talk at all that much when he's reffing a game, and he's not a massive showy type of ref, you know, and he's not really coaching. He's not like Fergal Horgan, who's very communicative and very on top of things. He's much more, you know, he'd be a much more reserved type approach to the whole thing. But I think he's an excellent referee, by the way, and in the situation around the Richie Hogan sending off, which obviously only in Kilkenny is an elbow to the head, not a red card, but look, that's their business and that's how they decide to do it. That's how they decide to do things. In fairness to James Owens, right? Without naming any names, he was left on his own by and large to make that decision. Now, if you think how lonely a place that is, in front of whatever the global audience is, and 82,000 people, knowing that he is going to have to send someone off in an All-Ireland final, the brass balls and the courage for him to do that, which was the correct decision, by the way, I think spoke volumes for him. And I think he's been largely pilloried here for something like Barry mentioned, I think, which is a key point, that they'd never got a chance to really road test this in preliminary competitions, which probably would have ironed out a lot of these kinks. And instead, what happened is a big major faux pas happened in the full glare of the white heat of championship. Yeah, and that's Barry, really unfortunate for him.
Barry, it was only his, I think you interviewed Irish Independent yesterday, you said it was only his third game this year, when at that stage of a normal season, he'd be into his fifth or sixth game, and he'd be very familiar with a new rule. Well, first, like, a new rule is a big deal, or it used to be a big deal. They're now obviously coming a little bit thicker and faster.
Absolutely, Mikey. And just like a few points there in terms of, I actually thought that, I thought Brian Lohan, and actually a bit similar to Derek in Derek's case, about, was it 3 years ago? I thought Brian Lohan and Warden Derek showed commendable restraint. Like, I didn't think he threw James under the bus. He actually mentioned that he was in support of the rule. He could easily have pilloried the rule as well. That's the first thing. Second thing, I did a documentary a few years ago, Men in Black, and I'm a teacher like Derek, and teachers by their nature tend to be, we're not taciturn, put it that way. We tend to like to talk, and I would be a communicator on the pitch, and maybe too much so. And James Owens, and sometimes your persona on the pitch reflects your persona in life. James Owens, a lovely guy. He's quiet, he's reserved. In fact, I was with him for 13 or 14 years at national level. I wouldn't even know him that particularly well. You know, I'd know other lads a bit better personality-wise, but he's certainly not an intention seeker. And the last thing there on that, which Rory mentioned, was that James Owens is handling the Richie Hogan sending off was shown to the guys in Craw Park as being a superb example of refereeing, because what he did that day was he just took his time.
His time.
He weighed up the options. He knew the evidence of one eyes. He went and checked on Cathal Barrett. He saw blood. He realized he Brecken himself had been an elbow, and he got it 100% right. And it was a brilliant decision. And again, maybe James himself, if he spoke to him, which won't happen, is that maybe last Sunday, you know, James did debate it briefly, I think, with Cathal McAllister. But I think the rule has too many moving parts. And the other thing, too, is that a goal-scoring opportunity in hurling. I mean, I saw a clip there yesterday evening. Bubbles got a brilliant goal in the 16 final against
Kilkenny.
But, like, if you froze it when Bubbles got the ball with Paul Murphy up his backside, it was the course good opportunity. But once he went by Paul Murphy, he got a goal out of nothing. Like, so it's not like soccer. The goal scoring opportunity in soccer is you have to be in the penalty area.
One-on-one with the goal.
One-on-one. In hurling, and Derek knows this, like in hurling, sir, I mean, the guys in Derek's own county, Owen Kelly, Paul Flynn. Dan, they could score a goal with four guys in front of them. Sure, so what's a goal scoring opportunity? That's a tough one.
Look at Seamus Callanan's goal in the same game. You know, I know it was a miss hit, that wasn't a goal scoring chance and it snuck in. Which is why Derek, I'll just play devil's advocate here for a second and say, if I'm in James Owen's shoes, Morris picks up the ball. Morris has possession of the ball. He's 30 yards from goal on the angle. And next thing, for whatever reason, you know, if you're looking for, as you say, it's hard to read somebody's mind, but McCarthy slides in on his knees from a distance and absolutely cleans him out of it. So you could ask the question is, why has he taken him out with quite so much force if he doesn't think this guy is in a position to score a goal?
Yeah, and it's very hard to answer or even come up with it because there's so many anomalies. I think that's the point I made about the interpretation and grayness around it. But, you know, it's actually impossible to answer that. You know, that's why it probably needs... It needed a trial period. It needed a period of kind of, we all felt at the start of the year that we would be reacting to this. The other thing I'd say it maybe needs, and Barry might be able to answer this, is the mechanisms after a decision like that in terms of interaction between managers and referees and improvement areas and that. Even, you know, what's the situation in the week afterwards, like with James Owens? Is he brought to the referee's assessor? Is he not held accountable? Because I don't even like that word. But
well, there's a meeting tomorrow night, isn't there?
Yeah, and you know, there's an assessment of performance. If you like we all are under intense scrutiny when you're involved in at that level, and no more than anybody, you're going to make mistakes. We've made hundreds of them over the years. The point being, I suppose, is that maybe a mechanism that would allow more interaction, that would actually allow for someone to say, listen, hand up, I made a mistake here, and almost humanize the mistake to the point where it doesn't become much of a topic the rest of the week. You know, you can't but help stand in his shoes for the week, in his work situation, in his normality of his own life, and kind of say and feel a little bit sorry for him, as well as feeling sorry, if you like, for the Clare players, you know, and Brian Lowen and his charges. But I think there's maybe a mechanism that would allow more of a, you know, a discussion, you know, afterwards, and be able to park it on the Monday or Tuesday and come out and say, listen, I made a mistake there, as opposed to people commenting saying he should be relegated to the Lowry March straight away, or he should be relegated, you know, he should be refereeing Christy Ring, or, you know, I'm not saying there shouldn't be consequences for mistakes, but the point I mean is that it should be kind of, you know, managed better, I feel, you know.
Did you ever find yourself wishing you had a public outlet, Barry?
You see, again, I can see, and I know that, in fact, I know we keep referring maybe to soccer and so on, but I do, at least in terms of, like, I know there is room for interaction with managers. You can't speak to them, I think, in soccer, Premier League at least, half an hour after the final whistle, you can't to any, so that allows a cooling off period. But it would suit, again, go back to the kind of persona of the referee. Brian Gavin, James McGrath, John Keenan, would have no bother, because that's the kind of personalities they have. I would no problem talking to managers, talk too much maybe. But some guys just are not comfortable, you know, trying to talk and maybe explain away something. Not explain away, but trying to explain something that, look, they know is wrong. And I know it's been a regular thing about, you know, it should be a spokesperson for referees, and there should be someone comes out, you know, and I'm involved. I'm a mentor for Sean Stack this year, like, and I wouldn't think there's a huge problem with, like, I don't think Croke Park would come out and said anything about this week. Rory mentions a meeting tomorrow night. That'll be kind of in camera, and things might seep out, but probably not. So I personally have no problem if, you know, Croke Park maybe came out and said, you know, people admit, like, James knows himself he made a mistake. There's no one can defend this. It's not like, you know, a bit like the Alan Kelly one with Derek's team. You can't defend it. The mistake is a mistake. The cameras are there. Alan Kelly's one was more, I suppose, black and white, because it was, the ball clearly wasn't over the line. Whereas this one, and this is the part of the problem, is that maybe the rule is just too ambiguous or too vague, because you can't definitely prove that James Owens was wrong. And we all think he was wrong, but there is the possibility that, you know, Morris was on a beeline for the goal and could have fired a shot across Quilligan and maybe hit it in the far corner for the goal of the year. But we'll never know.
Created a one a sort of a 2v1 scenario with a hand pass across the square to Shamie Callinan. That's a goal scoring opportunity, even though the player himself that's taken out is not the one that may be in for the chance himself. So I think there's loads of different. One of the biggest issues, and Derek, we spoke about this, because that conversation that we put together for Allianz League Sunday that night, obviously we put a bit of work into that, right? And I think there's a huge difference between, like, if you look at Fergal Horgan's style, for instance, he's almost like a coach in a lot of ways. Like, he does an awful lot of yapping. So he pulls fellas back from maybe that extra little flake where he will end up having to blow. But no one could tell me that his refereeing of Kilkenny Wexford did, if you were to apply the letter of the law of hurling, should not have resulted in at least 15 frees in the first 5 minutes alone. But he didn't blow for any, or hardly any. So there's a big difference, I think, in the way the rules are applied in hurling. And this is, look, people can take this whichever way they like, but there's a big difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Some referees apply the spirit of it and allow things flow. Gavin was, obviously Fergal Horgan. James is very good at it as well. And Barry, you were yourself. But then they'll rein it in and they'll apply the letter when it's needed to. And some are very pernickety and will apply the letter of the law full stop. Maybe Colm Lyons is more of that ilk. I think their problem is they're trying to adhere to a rule book that is very grey in lots of areas. And then they're trying to adhere to a hurling public, which, as far as I can see, hasn't really decided what kind of game do they want.
Barry, on that point then, what I wanted to ask you about was the shadowy figures known as referee assessors, which that comes up every now and again. Joe Canning mentioned it on Game On a couple of weeks ago, that he says they're the problem. He says every referee is, in their heart of hearts, you know, is that kind of swallow the whistle, and kind of what we saw in the Wexford-Kilkenny match tonight, where the other evening, where there was passages of that where Hugh Lawler and Liam Ryan were allowed to be Hugh Lawler and Liam Ryan, where another referee wouldn't allow them. What, can you explain to us a little bit how that works, the referee assessor, the assessment of your refereeing, and how influential it is in a referee's style?
See, I think, Mikey, that maybe early in your career, you know, you're almost obsessed with getting, you know, you get your assessment back by email and it's a 3 or 4 page document, at least it was. It's been reduced now and, you know, you're looking, at one stage you got it's like Derek correcting an essay by a student in De La Salle, like it was like, you could get 85 or 86 or whatever, you were thrilled, like, and then, you know, you could get 72 and you'd be like, almost bad humor for the week. But when you get to a certain level, I actually thought Johnny Murphy kind of crossed that line last Saturday in that I thought it was Johnny's best game. Johnny would be one of those referees, perhaps, who, as Rory said, referees to the letter of the law rather than the spirit. But I thought last Saturday he let it off, you know, if you use that phrase, he let it off to Dublin and Galway could, you know, there was plenty of physicality. Okay, it wasn't as physical as Wexford and Kilkenny, but it wasn't as close a game. And I thought Johnny got it exactly right. And just, it's a pity in a way. I was actually thinking myself on Sunday morning, I was thinking, I've had a really good weekend now in terms of A, hurling refereeing, but B, hurling matches. Because previous to that, like Clare and Waterford, you know, Derek obviously saw it. Clare and Waterford was tame enough and it was a bit one-sided and there was no real, didn't seem to be huge intensity at times. Whereas last Saturday, the three games, particularly Wexford and Kenny, was just blinding stuff in terms of, it was just fascinating, so it was. Like even actually, Conor McDonald didn't even get mentioned because I thought his reflexes for the goal was incredible. And Murphy hadn't, the ball hadn't gone a yard and McDonald had it back in the net. Yeah. So it was a great weekend for hurling, but obviously that's all forgotten about because, as Derek mentioned earlier, one mistake. Get back to the original question, Mikey. When you get to a certain level of experience, you're not overly concerned with the assessor or the advisor in the stand. You know, Farragut is showing that. Paul Dwyer is showing that now. Johnny Murphy, as I alluded to, showed it last Sunday. And I'm sure James Owens doesn't need an assessor or an advisor last Sunday evening. He's not even, might even read the report for a while because he knows he probably erred, he got wrong. And, you know, it is difficult. Rory's right. The rules can be quite vague. Like, careless use to hurley is a yellow card. And striking with the hurley is a red card.
It's red. But what's the difference?
Therefore, where's the difference between, you know, and there are, and that's maybe it makes the game, like Derek was on there about previous television, about the integrity of the game and about the chivalrous nature of it and so on. And he's right in the sense that referees quite often trust that the players themselves won't cross a line. No one can enforce the red card in Wexford and Offaly last Sunday, or Wexford and Kilkenny. It was manly stuff. It was fantastic stuff for about 98, 99 minutes. And no one came close to a red card, and it was enthralling. And like, obviously, Ferrigal handled it superbly, it has to be said.
Okay, we'll have to wrap this up in a minute. So I'll just go around the houses. I'll start with you, Rory. Should this rule be kept as it is? Should it be tweaked or should it be scrapped?
I would 100% keep it. I would draw people's attention to the hand-wringing and the doom-mongers and the naysayers when the black card came in. And I would 100% be of the conviction that the black card has been an unqualified success. It has eradicated the body check. It eradicated the third man tackle. The Sean Kavanagh pull-down very, very rarely happens any longer. You still see the odd deliberate trip, etc. But the black card has been a big, big success, and it was modified. It's now a sin bin as opposed to a player off and a player on. And there was some pain as well. Lest we forget the All-Ireland Club Final of, I think, 2014, involving Castlebar Mitchells and Vincent's, when poor old Richie Feeney got black carded early on and everyone was saying, oh, Jesus, isn't that terrible? And he's missing an All-Ireland final. Like, these things happen. There may be a sacrificial lamb at the start while these rules are bedding in. But sometimes there is that little bit of pain at the beginning. Just everyone just needs to calm down. This rule will find its way eventually. And it is in for good reasons. And it will, but it does need a little bit of a tweak. It does need, like, there's maybe too much jeopardy involved. If it's a goal scoring opportunity, like what Owen Murphy did, for instance, then it's the bin and a penalty. But if it's something like, we'll say what Aidan McCarthy did, then it's like, maybe it's the bin and the bin alone and a 21-yard free. I think people and rule makers, and look, Derek's on the committee now, so we'll make the pitch. Right? We'll make the pitch. You know? But I do think it'll just need to be tweaked as we go along and legislate it far and give people a better understanding and allow referees get more used to it. But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Absolutely do not.
Okay, Derek.
Mikey, sorry, before Derek speaks to it. Mikey, I think we found our referee spokesman.
Oh, yeah, isn't he? He's powerful.
Rory is going to get that gig.
Yes, it's the role he's born to play. So,
absolutely.
So, Derek, what will you be saying at your first meeting then? Are you going to scrap this, tweak it, or keep it as it is?
I'll be listening. That's what I'll be doing. Like all the other cute fellas that get involved in things like this. Look, I'm on the record of saying I think the yellow and a stonewall penalty or a stonewall decision where someone is cynically dragged out in a clear goal scoring opportunity. You know, for me, that's a penalty inside the 21 as opposed to inside a small parallelogram. So I'm against the kind of, you know, the sin bin and if you like in the yellow, but I'm definitely for some sort of punishment for cynical foul, albeit even if it involves tightening the area where it is, you know, new lines on the field. I'm just thinking, you know, a definite kind of, you know, area where it is, you know, as opposed to learning from the Ed McCarthy situation where it's out in the corners and being a little bit more, you know, a little bit more or less ambiguous about you know, what's involved for the referee and a bit more definite in terms of the rules. So the wording will be important then. But again, I wouldn't be throwing it out altogether, but I definitely would be changing it to some degree.
Okay, and Barry, the man with possibly the most knowledge of how these things work.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. If you put together what Rory and Derek said, with probably what I would agree with, it probably needs to be tweaked. Like, it won't be tweaked now because, you know, the championship has started. But what you might see is that maybe there has to be, as the lads mentioned there, a sacrificial lamb, and that's James Owens or that's Aidan McCarthy, depends on your perspective, is that I'd imagine going forward, it'll only be really blatant goal-scoring attempts now will be penalised. I think referees will be kind of reluctant, maybe encouraged to be reluctant, that unless it's almost one-on-one or it's everyone watching the television camera can see, oh, yeah, that's a goal-scoring chance there. if it's not one of those that is pulled down and is fairly cynical or fairly blatant, it won't happen. So that could be a positive from it, in that I predict, in a way, I could be wrong here now in 5 or 6 weeks' time, but I predict that this might be a turning point, in that it'll be implemented better maybe in the future, and there had to be a fall guy. I suppose the only good thing would be that James Owens is experienced enough to get over this, whereas a younger referee mightn't be. And secondly, Clare are not out. This happened in a Ireland quarter final where the team is out. It's obviously, you know, huge, massive ramifications. Whereas, without trying to, you know, sugar it a bit, like, Clare still have a chance.
Yeah. So you're saying a rule can be tweaked in its implementation when it's not possible for it to be tweaked in the rule book.
And because this one is so vague and there's so many interpretations, it could be that a referee's meetings, you know, we can't keep going down this road now. You know, we've had about five of these so far, and I would think one of them is what it's brought in for. I'd imagine that the Conall Flood one.
And
that's the one it was brought in for. The other four, I think there was, you know, one in the Galway match, one in the Waterford match, and one in the Tipperary, Limerick and Cork. Yeah. They're open to debate now, and I suppose in many ways that's the problem. They can't be open to debate.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, Peter Casey got one the other night, and
that was a bit ropey as well.
Yeah, it was a bit. I think we'd all.
It can be. You're right. It can be tweaked in its implementation. That's a good way of putting it.
Okay.
I think that's called a euphemism.
Yes, I think it is. Well,
it's classic GA language for let's make it as, you know, grey as possible so we can cover ourselves.
Maybe we can all get on this rules committee. How about that? We all get on it. All right. Thanks very much, gents. And on that chilling note, the idea of me joining a Croke Park committee, we'll leave it. Thank you to Derek and to Barry and to Oisin and to Cora earlier. As always, reminder, all the matches can be followed on RTE Radio, Saturday and Sunday Sport this weekend, and the RTE website, the RTE News app, and you'll have two football matches live on RTE2 at the weekend, the eagerly anticipated meeting of Mayo and Leitrim in the Connacht Football Championship, and the slightly less sarcastically eagerly awaited meeting of Derry and Donegal in the Ulster Football Championship. Our other podcasts are out there. We Become Heroes with Marie Crowe is Anne Downey this week, and there'll be a new soccer podcast with Liam Brady tomorrow. So that's all the housekeeping done. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you all next week.
Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point, and there's the whistle. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. It's over the bar.